This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. Political rallies are full of chants, but probably few like this.
PowerPoint! PowerPoint! PowerPoint!
Yes!
PowerPoint! PowerPoint!
Yes, this is the nerdiest presidential campaign in history!
Former tech executive and entrepreneur Andrew Yang hopes to capitalize on that nerd cred in his Democratic presidential campaign. The crowd is chanting because Yang has promised to deliver the State of the Union addresses using PowerPoint. That's what they were chanting. PowerPoint, PowerPoint. It's just one of the big ideas that he has for remaking America, including his signature policy, the universal basic income. He's also gained enough support to qualify for the first presidential debate. Andrew Yang joins us now from NPR in New York. Andrew, welcome to 1A.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me, Joshua.
Let me start with you with the same question we start with for all of the candidates who come on our program. Why should the American people elect you president?
We are undergoing the greatest economic transformation in the history of our country, what experts are calling the fourth industrial revolution. It is what led Donald Trump to win in 2016, that we'd automated away 4 million manufacturing jobs in Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. And my friends who work in technology know that what we did to the manufacturing jobs, we will now do to the retail jobs, the call center jobs, the fast food jobs, the truck driving jobs, and on through the economy. This is just going to accelerate as AI actually lands and becomes commercially useful in many contexts. So I'm running for president to help manage this transition and help the American people have a genuine path forward in a time of historic transformation.
You mentioned that so many jobs have been automated out of existence, which is true. With regards to the rise of President Trump, I think he won by appealing to people who feel not just that their jobs were automated out of existence, but that they were emigrated out of existence. There's a cultural shift. There's an anger over the current economy. How do you address that anger on a visceral level?
It's all very much tied together, Joshua. So immigrants have definitely been scapegoated, and one of the major themes of my campaign is that it is not immigrants that are causing economic dislocation. It is technology, and that if you go to an Amazon fulfillment center, it is not wall-to-wall immigrants. It is wall-to-wall machines and robots, and the numbers bear this out, that 80% of the manufacturing jobs that were lost in these areas were due to automation and not globalization or immigration.
Why politics? What made you decide to run for president?
Well, I spent the last 7 years helping create several thousand jobs in the Midwest and the South, and I was staggered by the disparities between regions. Like, I was getting all these accolades for my work with Venture for America, and I felt like I was pouring water into a bathtub that has a giant hole ripped in the bottom. And unfortunately, that hole is about to get bigger when autonomous cars and trucks arrive, when AI displaces some of the 2.5 million call center workers in the United States, as 30% of malls and stores close in the next 4 years because Amazon is sucking up $20 billion in commerce each year. And so if you look at this set of problems and you think, okay, how can you reasonably solve them? There is no feasible way to solve them that does not involve an activated, invigorated government. And so that's why I'm running for president.
Why president? Why not some other elected office like a governor or a senator?
Well, if you look at it, these are very much nation-scale issues. I'm from New York, and New York's not so much the epicenter of a lot of these changes. And we do not have that much time. We have 5 to 10 years before self-driving trucks hit the highways. And there are 3.5 million Americans who drive a truck for a living, and 7 million Americans who work in truck stops, motels, and diners that rely upon those truckers stopping every day. So if you have 5 to 10 years, and you're a citizen, then, you know, what are reasonable moves you can make that would actually help solve the problem?
Before we talk policy, and I do want to spend time with you camping out on your policy proposals, we have a rich entrepreneur with no government experience as president right now. Do we need another one?
Well, Donald Trump is a terrible president because he's a terrible president. He's certainly not an exemplar of entrepreneurs around the country, and most entrepreneurs like me regard him as more of a fraud and a marketing charlatan than a genuine builder. And so, you know, it's up to the American people what sort of background they're looking for. But I would suggest that one of the reasons why Donald Trump won in 2016 and Bernie Sanders was so popular and Barack Obama won in 2008 was that we've had this sinking feeling that our government has been behind the curve in addressing these problems. And unfortunately, that remains true today.
We're speaking to 2020 Democratic presidential hopeful Andrew Yang. Let's get to some of your questions in just a moment. First, let's start with this big idea, the universal basic income. It's what you refer to as the freedom dividend. Essentially, and I'm just reading from your campaign site, it would be $1,000 a month for every American adult over the age of 18, regardless of their work status or any other factor. They could use it to pay bills, to start a business, to increase their education, to paint if they wanted to. You wouldn't be allowed to lend against it or borrow against your dividend. And you argue that it would permanently grow the economy. Mike asked, how could we possibly afford this?
It's much more affordable than most Americans think. Our economy is up to a record $20 trillion, GDP up $5 trillion in the last 12 years. But the way we can afford this very straightforwardly is by putting a mechanism in place such that the American people actually benefit from these innovations and economic changes. Anyone listening to this who's paying attention knows that Amazon paid zero in federal taxes last year. So reflect on that for a second. Trillion-dollar tech company, closing 30% of Main Street stores and businesses. The most common job in the U.S. economy is working as a retail worker, a cashier, making $10 an hour. So 30% of those jobs go away and the American people receive zero in return. And so when you ask, how can you afford this? What we have to do is we have to join every other advanced economy and have a mechanism where Amazon pays a tiny sliver of every transaction. We get a sliver of every Google search, every Facebook ad, eventually every robot truck mile. And because our economy is now so vast, even a mild value-added tax would generate over $800 billion in new revenue. That, combined with the money being in our hands that would circulate over and over again through our Main Street businesses and economies, direct cost savings on things like incarceration, homelessness services, and emergency room healthcare, and the value gains from having a stronger, healthier, better educated, mentally healthier population would be enough to pay for a freedom dividend of $1,000 a month for every individual. I've done the math.
Amanda wrote on our Facebook page, as a senior on fixed income, I would appreciate this. Could afford decent food, housing, and glasses and dental. David tweeted, do you honestly believe you could convince Congress to fund universal income during your presidency?
Well, this is the fun part. Right now, I'm top 10 in the CNN rankings. I'm growing every day. And so let's play it out. I win the presidency in 2021. Democrats and progressives are thrilled to have beaten Donald Trump, and they're thrilled at the prospect of getting money into the hands of families and children and citizens. Now, here's the great thing. Republicans and conservatives are going to look up and say, wait a minute, this is a massive win for rural areas, for red states on the interior, for areas that have been devastated by automation. And there's one state that's had a dividend for almost 40 years, and that state is Alaska, which is a deep red state, and it was passed by a Republican governor. We do not need 80% of Congress to pass this. We only need 51%. And as soon as the dividends start going out, it will be unstoppable.
Yeah, but isn't that kind of the problem with politics today, Andrew? I mean, you know, Americans love, by and large, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. They love what it does for them. But President Obama really had to pass it with just Democrats and almost zero support really, from Republicans. So the kind of 50% plus one politics is not optimal. Raphael tweeted, how can I thoroughly explain to my conservative friends that UBI, universal basic income, is more than just a handout?
Well, this is an idea that has very deep roots in American history. Thomas Paine was for it at the founding of the country, called it the citizen's dividend. Martin Luther King championed it in the 60s, called it the guaranteed minimum income. And it is what he was fighting for when he was assassinated in 1968. Milton Friedman and 1,000 economists signed a study saying this would be tremendous for America. And it passed the U.S. House of Representatives twice in 1971 under Nixon. This is a bipartisan idea. And if you talk to your conservative friends about it, you can say, look, this is good for individual autonomy. It's good for businesses. It's good for markets. It's going to make us stronger. And many conservatives really like this idea because what they detest is bureaucracy making people's decisions for them. They like the idea of a dividend and economic independence for more citizens.
Yeah, but I kind of feel like you're making a head argument for a hard issue. It feels like giving people money that they have not earned. For conservatives who just say, this doesn't feel right. This feels like we should be making more work for people so they can earn that $1,000 a month instead of just handing it to them.
Well, I've been having conversations. I've been campaigning for months, and I've had conversations with hundreds, thousands of people who voted for Donald Trump, and they are very open to this. You know, it's one reason why I'm peeling off thousands of Trump voters, conservatives, independents, and libertarians. We can build a very broad, deep coalition around the dividend. It's much, much bigger than people believe.
I will note that you are getting quite a bit of support. Before we pause, one listener tweeted, "Yang is the only candidate that excites me, yet when I chat with my parents, they believe we need a Biden, a Harris, as in Kamala Harris, or even Sanders to beat Trump. How are you reaching the older population who believe you are selling a pipe dream?"
Well, that's one reason I love those conversations, is a lot of the way we're getting to parents is through their kids. So the kids look up and say, "Hey, mom and dad, really just check this out." And then what they do is they have their parents watch like a Joe Rogan interview or even a Ben Shapiro interview, because I've done interviews that are long form with various journalists that parents are open to. But that's the conversion experience. That's how the Yang Gang grows. So thank you for keeping after your parents. Just keep at it and you'll see they'll warm up.
We'll hear from some more fans potentially in the Yang Gang as we continue with Andrew Yang, asking him more questions about his 2020 presidential campaign. Want to talk to you about Medicare for All. You also have a concept in your campaign called human-centered capitalism, but we'll get to as much as we can, including possibly some of your other campaign planks. You've got quite an extensive list of campaign policies on your website, and we'll get to as many of those as we can. I'm Joshua Johnson, glad to be with you, and you are listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.
Support also comes from Rothy's. Rothy's are the everyday flats for life on the go. Stylish, versatile, fully machine washable, and they go with everything from yoga pants to dresses and skirts. Best of all, there's zero break-in period thanks to their woven design, seamlessly crafted from recycled water bottles. Plus, Rothy's always come with free shipping and free returns and exchanges. Find out why BuzzFeed called them their forever shoes at rothys.com/1A.
I'm Jesse Thorne. Timothy Simons played Jonah Ryan on HBO's Veep. On a show known for its insults, has anybody got more of them than Jonah?
If the cruelty registered, our show would be an hour and 15 minutes long, because every scene would be like, "Excuse me, you can't speak to me that way."
This week on Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. We are speaking with Andrew Yang, a Democratic candidate for president in 2020. Let's talk about one of your other big campaign planks, which is Medicare for All. You say you are a supporter of Medicare for All, that there should be a holistic healthcare system for all Americans. We should focus more on preventive care, holistic care, change the incentive structure for doctors, and make it easier for doctors and hospitals to innovate in treatment. You say that as president, you'll work with Congress to create this Medicare for All system. Do you really believe that Congress wants to work with you on that? And if so, who do you think are the members of Congress right now who will be your strongest allies in making that happen?
Well, you can see that a significant proportion of the legislators who are running for president are already out for Medicare for All. And the majority of American citizens now believe that this is where we should head. So I believe this is going to become increasingly popular over time, because most Americans are not very happy with our healthcare system. We're in the worst of all situations, where we're spending twice as much as other countries to worse results. And it's this incredible impediment to our economic dynamism, where it makes it harder to hire people, it makes it harder to treat people like a full-time employee, it makes it harder to change jobs, it certainly makes it harder to start a business. So Americans are fed up with our healthcare system and believe that we need to start moving in this direction, and I'm sure it's just going to become increasingly popular and mainstream as time goes on.
That doesn't quite answer my question. I hear you on Americans, but they're also fed up with Congress for not doing what they're asking them to do. If Medicare for All is something that Americans want, who in Congress do you believe you can work the most closely with to get that done?
Well, certainly, and I'm referring specifically to the legislators who've already come out for Medicare for All. So that's obviously Senator Sanders. It's Senator Harris and like the other folks that have actually come out and said this is the direction we need to head. So it's not just me talking about it. Obviously, there are, you know, half a dozen of the candidates have already come out for it.
Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, do you feel like that they would be on board with Medicare for All as you see it?
You know, it's like I've seen them come out with more tepid statements, I believe. It's something that hopefully, again, the American people can persuade their duly elected representatives that this is the right direction.
You also talk about one other major campaign plank, but we're getting a number of questions from listeners about your plan to fight climate change. You said on your campaign site that you want to make it easier for the average American to contribute to solutions for climate change, help bring down household electric bills, help it make it easier for communities to have their own efforts to fight climate change and invest in innovation. Give me a sense of where you would start with climate change. If you were president today, what would you be pursuing policy-wise tomorrow as it relates to climate change?
The first thing I would do is rejoin the Paris Accords. Since dropping out was obviously a dramatic move in the wrong direction, I would implement a carbon fee and dividend to have companies internalize the cost of emissions, and you could reduce carbon emissions significantly. I would invest in our infrastructure, try and make it more not just safe and modern, but also more sustainable and renewable. I would invest in carbon capture and sequestration technologies to try and help mitigate the emissions that are already in the atmosphere. But I want to press on one thing, which is that right now it is very hard to galvanize the American people around climate change because 78% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. 57% can't afford an unexpected $500 bill. So if you go to them and say, hey, we need to worry about climate change, it's an existential threat. A lot of them just look at you like this blank face saying, like, I can't pay my bills. Like, I'm worried about, you know, putting food on the table for my kid. The penguins are not, like, high on my priority list. And that seems wrong-headed, but that's just where a lot of Americans are. So if you pass a dividend of $1,000 a month, and then that parent looks at their child and can say, when you turn 18, you're going to receive $1,000 a month from your country because your country loves you, your country values you, and we care about your future. And then you go to that same parent and say, we need to worry about climate change. They'll look at their child and say, yes, we do. You know, we can generate so much energy around climate change just by getting the economic boot off of people's throats. This is an accelerant. You pass a $1,000 dividend and then you watch how excited Americans are to tackle climate change.
That sounds like you're counting on one gigantic change to the U.S. government in order to make a change that would deal with an existential threat. That sounds like a lot to rely on, like hoping that Congress will pass this universal basic income so that Americans can deal with something that will hurt us no matter what.
Well, the automation of jobs is going to hurt us too, Joshua. And there's nothing stopping a majority of citizens in a democracy from voting ourselves a dividend. Right now, a mindset of scarcity is winning in this country. It's sweeping our communities, and we can all sense it. It's why we feel like our country is getting less rational, less forward-looking, less optimistic. Because if everyone just has their head down trying to pay their bills, then no one's worried about climate change and the big problems. So we can amend our capital flows like that. Like, it's so fast. All we have to do is just get together as a democracy and say, hey, let's have a dividend. It's much easier to amend our capital flows and much faster than it is some of our bigger systems. So let's make the quick move first. And then when people can think more clearly, when people are actually 13 points of IQ more rational by the studies, then we're going to be able to solve the other problems very quickly.
You
Not
come out
very quickly, but this is like the certainly the biggest thing we could do very quickly.
You come out of Silicon Valley, out of tech culture. I covered Silicon Valley for a number of years in San Francisco for KQED before I came here. And there are two very different mindsets. You know, Silicon Valley is about quick innovation, disruption, move fast and break things, as Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook likes to say. It's designed to iterate and iterate and iterate and iterate. If you use the Agile system for software development, every 2 weeks you've got these goals to achieve. The federal government is designed to move more slowly. There are three branches that are designed to be in tension with one another, to say, wait, the House likes this, but the Senate might not. Congress likes this, but the presidency might not. We might pass this bill, but the courts may say it's unconstitutional. Our government is not designed to move fast. Are you sure you're not setting yourself up for frustration? It doesn't move at the speed of Silicon Valley.
Well, just know that I'm fully cognizant of the nature of D.C. And though I do have a background in entrepreneurship and business, I spent the last 7 years running a national nonprofit that was working primarily in the Midwest and the South. So I don't have any illusions. I'm not some whiz-bang Silicon Valley operator. I went to law school. Like, I've gotten grants from states. You know, so I get it. The unfortunate truth is that we are years behind the curve in solving these problems. And I understand the reality of getting these bills and laws across the finish line. I'm confident that at this point, the American people are ready for real solutions. And that when I'm president, then it's going to be much, much more realistic to pass some of these solutions, because folks will regard me as a non-ideological problem solver, which is what I am. And Republicans, independents, conservatives actually find me very, very reasoned and as someone they can work with. And Democrats and progressives obviously love the idea of eradicating poverty and doing some of these other things.
We're speaking with Andrew Yang, one of 23 Democratic candidates for president, as part of our candidate interview series, Foresight 2020. We've also spoken with Mayor Pete Buttigieg, Senator Bernie Sanders, author and spiritual advisor Marianne Williamson, former HUD Secretary Julian Castro, and Congressman Seth Moulton. You can check out all of our interviews online at the1a.org/20. 20-20. That's 20-20. More with Andrew Yang in just a moment. Stay close.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Google. Veteran Mitch Hoyt founded Skinny Sticks Maple Syrup, and he's showing that small businesses can do big things. Mitch started making syrup from a few trees in his Wisconsin backyard and now is connecting with customers worldwide with help from Google Tools. Skinny Sticks is one of millions of small businesses using Google to grow. Learn how Google is helping businesses in your state at google.com/economic impact.
After James Reeb was murdered in 1965, there was a national outcry.
But back at the scene of the crime in Selma, Alabama, many people responded differently.
So what happened then? And what could justice look like all these years later?
NPR's new podcast, White Lies, is seeking answers. Listen and subscribe now.
Back now to our conversation with Andrew Yang, a 44-year-old former tech executive who's hoping to win the Democratic nomination for president. One other major campaign plank, and I know we've only got you for a few more minutes, has to do with something that you describe as human-centered capitalism, which, as per the goals on your site, is to make the economy work for Americans and not the other way around. Can you give me one quick example of what human-centered capitalism would look like?
Oh, of course. So we're celebrating record high GDP while our life expectancy has declined for the last 3 years due to surges in suicides and drug overdoses. So what's more important to us, GDP or our life expectancy? Obviously, it's life expectancy. It's mental health and freedom from substance abuse. It's clean air and clean water. It's how our kids are doing. It's average income and affordability. So we're actually going to turn those into the new GDP. That's what human-centered capitalism is. Instead of cheerleading these phantom numbers that have no relationship to how our people are doing, we're actually going to measure our economic progress by how we are doing. And by changing those measurements, we can change everything, because then anything that makes our kids stronger, anything that helps someone get off drugs, anything that helps reintegrate an ex-convict into society, that actually counts as economic progress. Because GDP right now is going to pull us in the opposite direction. Self-driving cars and trucks will be tremendous for GDP and terrible for many Americans. So we have to change the measurements to reflect our lived reality as fast as possible.
Before I let you go, I want to get to one listener voicemail. You've also proposed to shrink the federal workforce. One of our listeners asked us about that. Here is what Cindy left in our inbox.
I am a federal employee. I heard Andrew Yang interviewed, and I was quite impressed with him. And then more recently, I heard that he wants to cut the federal workforce. And I am an employee at the EPA. And I have seen the impact of cuts on my agency and at the Forest Service, USDA, Department of Interior. Cuts for a long period of time have had a dramatic impact on the ability of those agencies to do what they need to do for the American people. And I am wondering why Andrew Yang would propose to cut the federal task force.
Cindy, thanks for your question. Andrew, before we let you go, what would you say to Cindy?
Well, certainly the EPA is the last place I would cut, and the Department of the Interior. I mean, like, that there are certain parts of government we need to grow dramatically, Forest Service among them. We're not able to actually address the drying forests in a reasonable way because we don't have the workforce. So we should be expanding dramatically in some areas, including where Cindy's working, the EPA. And then there are other parts of government we should be looking to prune, because the fact is that a lot of these workforces were set up at a particular time. And with the advent of new technologies, there are certain things we can do more efficiently. It's just an effective use of resources. But certainly the EPA, we'd be expanding dramatically along with the Forest Service and the Department of Interior.
Andrew Yang, a candidate for the Democratic nomination for president in 2020. Andrew, we appreciate your time. Safe travels on the campaign trail. And thanks for talking to us.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Thank you, Joshua.
This conversation was produced by Gabrielle Healy and edited by Miranda Fulmore. To learn more about them and the rest of the team, visit the1a.org/staff. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening. This is 1A.